Hello everyone, and welcome to Tata Technologies Q1 of Fiscal 25 Results Call. I am Vijay Lohia, heading Investor Relations. With me today are Mr. Warren Harris, CEO and MD, Tata Technologies, Ms. Sukanya Sadashivan, COO, Tata Technologies, and Ms. Savita Balachandran, CFO, Tata Technologies. This call is for 60 minutes. Our management team will give a brief overview of the company's performance, followed by a Q&A session. As you are aware, we do not provide specific revenue or earnings guidance, and anything said on this call which reflects our outlook for the future or which could be construed as a forward-looking statement must be reviewed in conjunction with the risks that the company faces. We have outlined these risks in the second slide of the quarterly fact sheet available on our website. Our press release and earnings deck have been filed with the stock exchanges and are also available on our website, www.tatatechnologies.com. I hope you've had a chance to look at them. Let me now turn over the call to Warren.
Thank you, Vijay, and thank you everyone for joining us on today's earnings call. Let me share some key highlights for the first quarter of fiscal 2025. I'll then pass the floor to Savita for a more detailed overview of our financial performance. At an aggregate level, revenue declined by 2.5% sequentially. This was informed in part by the expected seasonality of our value-added product reseller business that is reported as part of Technology Solutions. Specifically, Technology Solutions degrew by 7.4% from the prior quarter. As I previously shared, our products business typically does well at the end of each calendar year when our customers in the U.S. renew maintenance contracts and discharge year-end budgets. Consequently, revenue growth in the first half of the fiscal year is always lower than the second half of the year. Typically, the revenue split between H1 and H2 is roughly 40-60. In contrast to our products business, our education vertical grew by 4% sequentially. Moreover, the order book and pipeline for our education business is healthy, and we anticipate sustained growth throughout this fiscal year. Despite the aggregate sequential drop in top line, the performance of our technology solutions business was largely in line with expectations. In services, we also recorded sequential revenue decline of 1% on account of the short-term phasing of a number of large programs and the completion of our ramp down at WinFest. These customer-specific headwinds are isolated and unrelated to the overall market conditions, which we believe remain favorable as the manufacturing sector continues to future-proof itself through ongoing investments in alternative propulsion systems, software-defined products and services, and smart manufacturing. I am pleased to note that the WinFast transition is now largely behind us, and we fully expect sequential revenue growth of our services business to pick up from the current quarter. Confidence in our full-year prospects are fueled by our order book, continued positive momentum within our anchor accounts, together with tailwinds that we expect to continue to intersect with across automotive, aerospace, and industrial heavy machinery. Despite the decline in revenue in Q1, our margin performance remained resilient, with operating EBITDA coming in at 18.2% in Q1, compared with 18.4% in the previous quarter. Moreover, net profit increased by 3.1% sequentially. Q1 was also a solid quarter in terms of deal signings, with three large deals won during April, May, and June. Let me give you some color on these deals. We've been awarded a multi-million dollar, multi-year award for battery and pack design services by a global EV battery manufacturer. This engagement highlights the expansion of our upstream EV capabilities into battery pack engineering, thus extending our industry-leading EV proposition. We've also secured an engagement with a North American commercial vehicle manufacturer for the turnkey development of an all-new cab, highlighting once again the applicability of our turnkey full vehicle capabilities beyond the automotive sector. In aerospace, I am pleased to inform you that we've won a large deal from a European aerospace Tier 1 to develop first and business class seats for the commercial airline sector. This new logo further extends our growing aerospace customer base. As far as our offerings are concerned, within our product engineering segment, we continue to see healthy trends across our software-defined products and services offerings. Within our digital engineering lines of service, demand remains strong in the areas of digital thread, smart manufacturing, and customer experience solutions. Specifically in the software-defined products and services domain, we've secured a number of high-profile awards. They include, we've been selected by a commercial vehicle OEM as their SDV technology partner for the development of middleware stack on a high-performance computing platform. The strategic engagement will focus on building the foundational elements of their software-defined vehicle framework. Notably, we are now starting to witness the accelerated adoption of software-defined capabilities within the commercial and off-highway vehicle space. This growing demand should help us extend our ambitions beyond our traditional focus upon passenger vehicles. A European luxury OEM, automotive OEM, has selected Tata Technologies to deploy a cloud-based virtual platform for the development of software for, again, SDVs. With SDV technology increasingly defining the competitive landscape within the automotive sector, OEMs are investing in their own SDV platforms. With proprietary SDV platforms, OEMs can embrace as-a-service business models that position future opportunities to monetize data and digital services. As a consequence, OEMs are under pressure to shorten the time to market for their SDV propositions. This deal will see Tata Technologies employ virtualization and cloud-based development capabilities to enable the concurrent development of SDV technology from anywhere in the world, thus leveraging a global talent pool without any need to access physical hardware. We're also extending our industry-leading SDV capabilities by our network of partners and alliances. Building upon the collaboration we announced earlier in the year, we signed a memorandum of understanding in Q1 with Arm that is focused upon leveraging the Arm AE technology platform to accelerate the development of AI-enabled vehicles. In addition, we entered into a strategic partnership with a U.S.-based edge computing startup to develop an edge engine solution tailored specifically for SDV use cases. As I previously referenced, within our digital engineering offerings, demand for our smart manufacturing capabilities continues to scale across all focused industry sectors. Specifically in Q1, we leveraged our global footprint and manufacturing process knowledge to successfully implement SAP S/4HANA for Mitsubishi Electric in just 11 months, cutting the original program timeline by 25%. Our cross-functional teams streamlined business processes and applied digital accelerators to integrate multiple business units, enhancing operational efficiency by a significant 15%. This deployment has improved data visibility and decision-making throughout the Mitsubishi Electric enterprise. We've also implemented an MES solution for a global Tier 1 automotive OEM that's enabled them to monitor, track, document, and control the entire product lifecycle of the products that they deliver to their customers, thus helping the customer improve quality control and increase uptime while reducing inventory and costs. Additionally, we have created a global smart manufacturing template for this customer that will be deployed to an additional 20 manufacturing plants globally. Let me now provide you with an update on the progress we are making with AI and GenAI. We believe GenAI has the potential to revolutionize and transform the manufacturing sector. While the technology is still in the very early stages of adoption, we continue to see growing customer investments in GenAI to transform new product introduction, manufacturing, and aftermarket processes. Let me profile a couple of AI and GenAI solutions that we are currently implementing for our customers. We have partnered with a leading commercial vehicle manufacturer to deploy a GenAI-powered virtual sales assistant. This cutting-edge solution leverages large language models and internal databases to streamline sales processes, reduce training dependencies, and enhance productivity. By providing real-time product information and negotiation support, we've transformed the effectiveness of our customer sales teams. In North America, for a North American automotive Tier 1, we are also leveraging AI and GenAI to harmonize raw material purchasing across their entire supply chain. And for a luxury German automotive OEM, we're also using AI to accelerate their autonomous driving ambitions by enhancing the speed of object detection. Given the impact that GenAI will have on the manufacturing sector, we are making significant investments in training and capability development. In Q1, we have successfully launched a training program and a capability building program that will be focused upon building capacity in anticipation of growing market demand. Furthermore, in support of our plans to leverage GenAI to foster innovation, we've launched Innovent Hackathon in collaboration with our partners Microsoft and Tata Motors. This initiative aims to provide engineering students with a dynamic platform to upskill, showcase their creativity, and develop pioneering solutions using GenAI. The overwhelming response from the top 200 engineering colleges in India reinforces our confidence in the youth of this country. The registration phase concludes on July the 31st, and we look forward to culminating this journey with a demo day in January of next year. We anticipate that the best and brightest engineering students in India will present their GenAI innovations on that day. Before I hand over to Savita, let me give you a brief update on the current industry concerns surrounding the slowing sales momentum for electric vehicles. This calendar year, there has been a steady flow of stories in the mainstream and business press about a reversal in fortunes of the electric car industry. We believe that most technology transitions, including EVs, do not follow a smooth adoption curve. Despite growth rates tapering in 2024, the International Energy Agency continues to assert that global EV sales are likely to increase to somewhere close to 17 million units this year, meaning more than one in five cars sold around the world will be electric. We remain convinced that surging demand for clean, cheap EVs across the rest of this decade will completely change the global automotive industry. By 2035, the International Energy Association projects 50% of all cars sold globally will be EVs, cutting oil demand between 6 to 10 million barrels per day, equivalent to the current amount used for road transportation in the United States. In the coming decade, the automotive sector is clearly poised for a transformative shift. In addition to the move to electrification, this will be propelled by interrelated trends that include autonomous, connected, and shared vehicles. This AFIS transformation will usher in changes in consumer habits and mobility preferences, reconfiguring the landscape of value distribution, fostering innovative business strategies, and welcoming new players into the mobility sector. These trends are underpinned by technological progress in electronics and software that will drive an exponential demand for engineering services. This shift is unlikely to be reversed, which is good news for the automotive sector, engineering service providers like Tata Technologies, and most importantly, the planet. Let me now hand over to Savita to take you through our financial performance.
Thank you, Warren. Good morning or good evening, everyone, depending on your time zone. Thank you for joining us on this call today. Following the business overview shared by Warren, let me now walk you through our financial performance in the first quarter of fiscal 25. Our revenues from operations came in at 1,269 crores, with services contributing to 986 crores and technology solutions to the balance 284 crores during the quarter. The services segment, constituting about 78% of our revenues, was down 1% sequentially, driven by a short-term phasing of a couple of deals, as well as the completion of the ramp-down of the last batch of our people coming off the large full vehicle programs, as we had indicated previously. in our technology solution segment. The education business continued to maintain its growth trajectory on the back of a good order book, with revenues growing sequentially and in line with our expectations, supported by ongoing projects won with multiple state governments in the past quarters. This growth was more than offset by the anticipated seasonality in our products business, which typically has a relatively stronger volume in the second half of the year when our customers, mainly in the U.S., renew contracts and accelerate their budget spends. This meant the total technology solutions revenue registered a 7.4% sequential decline. The combined effect of the performance of the two segments resulted in the overall revenue decline of 2.5% sequentially on a reported basis. We continued to exercise strong operating discipline during the quarter, with the operating expenses reducing by 2.2%, thereby enabling us to maintain a relatively stable EBITDA margin that came in at 18.2% compared with 18.4% of the previous quarter. While our employee benefits expenses remained relatively flat, our other expenses witnessed a quarter-on-quarter increase of over 11.5%, led by increased professional fees and advisory expenses for some matters, increased CSR spend, as well as an increase in the travel expenses. This was, however, more than offset by the 12.4% decline in our outsourcing and consultancy charges as we continued to optimize our subcontracting and outsource services, especially in high-cost locations. Our focus remains steadfast on margin preservation this year, and we continue to aim for a 20% plus EBITDA margin in the long term as our business scales. To reinforce what we've previously communicated, leveraging operational efficiencies through focus on offshoring, people pyramid optimization, and productivity remains our key lever for margin expansion in the future while we build capabilities for sustainable growth. Our effective tax rate in the quarter came in at 26.2% compared with 31.9% of the previous quarter. Consequently, our profit after tax increased by 3.1% sequentially to 162 crores, registering a PAT margin of 12.8%, up 70 basis points quarter on quarter. Maintaining a strong balance sheet with robust liquidity is a key area of focus for us. At the end of first quarter, we continue to remain debt-free, and the net cash on our balance sheet stood at a healthy $131.4 million, compared with $146.3 million at the end of the previous quarter. This balance is after a dividend payout of $49 million that we did during the month of June. We've maintained robust collection efficiency, with the total DSO of 84 days compared with 83 days of the previous quarter and 96 days in the same quarter of last year. And billed DSO came in at 58 days, while unbilled DSO stood at 26 days at the end of Q1. Our cash conversion and working capital position has also shown improvement during the quarter. Our free cash flow stood at about 220 crores, and we saw a net release of close to 70 crores in working capital in Q1. In the last 3 years, the working capital requirements of our business has increased, driven by the growth we've seen in our education business, as well as the large fixed-price deals in our services segment. This led to a buildup of contract assets on our balance sheet for the revenues recognized as per the accounting standards, while the payment milestones have not yet been reached. However, this has had no impact on our collection efficiency, which in fact has seen improvement in the last 3 years, with the DSO coming in at about 83 days at the end of last fiscal in 2024, versus the position of 91 days where it stood at the end of fiscal 21. Additionally, we also limit the collection risk through appropriate commercial structures with our customers. Excluding these working capital changes, our net cash to free cash flow conversion has been in the range of 90 to 110%, which is in line with industry standards. Moving on to the operational metrics, the highlights are as follows. The total headcount stood at about 12,505 at the end of the quarter, a reduction of about 1.4%, reflecting about 183 employees compared with the previous quarter. And this reflects an optimization of our capacity between full-time employees and the outsourced resources. This quarter also saw the completion of redeployment of the last batch of associates coming off the full vehicle program, as indicated in the previous quarter. And this led to a 50 basis point improvement in our utilization, which stood at 86.5% during the quarter. We continue to focus on improving our people pyramid, and we look to hire strategically in some of our focus growth areas, as well as strengthening the base of the pyramid with more campus hires. Trends on attrition levels continue to remain favorable, as we saw our last 12-month attrition coming down again this quarter to 13.7%, compared with 14.5%, which it stood in Q4. The annualized attrition rate stood at about 12.8%, and we expect attrition to further reduce in the coming quarter. Regarding our mix of on-site and offshore revenues, revenue generated from outside our delivery centers in India and Romania and executed offshore improved by 130 basis points sequentially, reaching 39%. And we continue to implement measures to gradually enhance this metric. In closing, I would like to summarize that our margins have remained resilient during the quarter, reflecting our strong operating discipline. We expect sequential growth to pick up from Q2 onwards, supported by our healthy deal pipeline. We remain committed to strategically investing in key growth areas, while also optimizing cost and improving efficiency across the organization to ensure that we are poised for long-term success. Thank you. We can now open the floor for questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. In order to ensure that the management is able to answer queries from all participants, kindly restrict to two questions at a time. You may join back the queue for follow-up questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We'll take our first question from the line of Abhishek Kumar from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening, Warren and Savita. Thanks for taking my question. First question, Warren, is on demand. You mentioned in your opening remarks that there are isolated cases of weakness in few clients. Just wanted to understand, what do you mean by isolated cases and what gives you the confidence that these are not because of the EV slowdown or more broader trends, and then I have a follow-up.
Yeah, I think, responding to that, at an aggregate level, we're not really seeing any drop in demand. What we have seen over the last couple of years is that there are specific customer-related issues that are impacting the quantum of investment and the speed of investment, and so we're having to monitor that. But again, at an aggregate level, there is little change in the demand environment. And specifically, I think if you look at the OEMs, they're largely segregating into two groups. Those that have strong balance sheets that can invest through the transition in and around not just electrification but connected and shared and autonomous, and those organizations that do not have the ability to invest in the same way, and they're obviously having to balance their investment commitments with the short-term requirements of the business. So, we're watching and following those trends, and obviously looking to, as best we can, pick the winners.
Sure. Second question is on FY25 outlook. You indicated sequentially, you know, there should be acceleration from Q2. But just the arithmetic, you know, given a soft start to the year, you know, tells us that probably achieving growth similar to FY24 could be difficult. So any, I mean, you think the assessment is correct? Any color you'd like to give us for the full year growth expectations for FY25? Thank you.
Well, I think what we can say is that that we are confident in being able to drive sequential growth from the Q1 position. Q1 was not only informed by the runoff at Winfast, we also had some phasing issues with a couple of large projects that also contributed towards the solid but somewhat flat performance of the services business. We don't anticipate that will continue, and specifically the programs that that I've referenced have now kicked off and started, and so we're confident in the quarter-on-quarter growth that that should see the business at the end of the year being you know, much improved in terms of volumes from where we are today. You know, I think as we always do, we'll continue to work and monitor things as the year plays out, and we'll calibrate accordingly. But you know, right now I can say that we are confident in consistent growth across the quarters as the fiscal year plays out.
Great. Thank you so much, and I wish you all the best.
Appreciate it. Thanks. Thanks for the question.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Ruchi Mukhija from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead. Ms. Ruchi Mukhija, can you check if your line is muted?
Thank you for the opportunity. Warren, I had questions on demand only. You report that there has been some issue in a couple of large projects. Could you elaborate more on what kind of issues are these? Are these going to persist, or do we see reversal of these issues and we can count on growth from these projects?
You know, when large programs kick off, particularly mid-cycle refresh or full vehicle programs, you know, there's always the dynamic of setting the projects up in the appropriate way. There is a dependency upon the styling studio. There's a dependency upon onboarding suppliers at the right time, and the complexity of balancing all of those things out, you know, very often prompts a staggered start or a delayed start, and that's what we've seen with the programs that that I've referenced. But I would repeat that those programs are now online, and we've got clarity in terms of what they mean, not just now, but what our expectation is for the full year.
Secondly, one of your large peers, STL Tech, called out a specific weakness in automotive in European geography. Is your experience suggest something similar? Do you expect or do you see any challenges specifically for your European clients?
No, somewhat to the contrary. You know, we are engaged, obviously, with our anchor customers, Tata Motors and JLR. They have had a very good set of results themselves in the recent past, and that's informing their confidence in terms of CapEx and investment in new products. You know, we announced the joint venture with BMW in at the beginning of the fiscal year. We are building out our presence in Germany And despite the fact that the investment commitments is somewhat specific to the individual customers in that region, you know, I think again at a at an overall level, demand continues to grow. There is some volatility in the North American market that I think is being driven by concerns about the potential legislation change towards the end of the calendar year, but it's not having a material impact. So from our perspective, we remain cautiously optimistic about the demand environment and certainly that's informed our confidence in our commitment to drive sequential growth from the first quarter.
Thank you and all the best.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Moez Chandani from Ambit. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good evening and thank you for taking my question. My first question was on your near-term outlook. So do you expect growth to be gradual in Q2 and then accelerate forward in Q3 and Q4? Or do you think that we'll be returning to significant sequential growth in Q2 itself? So how do you see growth coming in throughout the next few quarters?
You know, we don't provide guidance, but what I will say is that that we expect growth to pick up, and we expect growth rates to be relatively range bound. I do not necessarily anticipate that that Q3 and Q4 will be very different than Q2, but we're obviously pushing hard across all of the sectors that we are operating in, and we're engaging in a very strategic way with all of our key and focused customers. So we'll be looking for opportunities to accelerate growth, but as of right now, in terms of visibility, we think that growth will be relatively consistent and, again, range-bound.
Got it. And also in the BMW JV, when do you expect it to start contributing to revenues?
Well, we expect the joint venture to be launched in the second half of this fiscal year. I announced in April that that we have to go through regulatory approval. We have to confirm the seed team and confirm the leadership team that will run that organization. Plans are going well. You know, we're working through the work that that will need to be undertaken to ensure that that organization is launched in a successful way, and the impact that that will have on the business, you know, I think we'll have much greater visibility as we enter the second half of the year. So I'm not going to comment on the impact that it will have on our business, but the business plan, as confirmed at the beginning of April, is being executed as we expected. And certainly, as far as timelines are concerned, we're confident that that we're going to meet what we've committed to each other.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we'd like to remind participants to press star and one to ask a question. Next question is from the line of Rajiv from Citi. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for the opportunity. Can you talk about the performance of service business ex-VinFast? And also, can you share what is the contribution of VinFast in 1Q? And the second question is, you have talked about the facing issues which you have faced in 1Q. Are all these behind or some part of it will also play out in 2Q?
Well, thanks for the question, Rajiv. I think if you look year-on-year at the business ex-VinFast, we've grown the services business by close to 26%, and so I think that demonstrates the momentum that we've certainly enjoyed over the last 12 months. And I think if we look sequentially, the business ex VinFast is up about 1%. In large part, that's because of the challenges that we've had in terms of the phasing of the large projects. But we certainly expect to be able to pick up from there in Q2, Q3, and Q4.
Mr. Rajiv?
That's all from my side.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Nitin Sharma from MC Pro Research. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Good evening. Warren, how large these commercial vehicle deal wins are, a broader range you define, and also do you see a rise in the contribution from the commercial vehicle segment significantly in FY25?
If I understand the question, you're asking about the commercial vehicle business?
Yes, how large these deals are, the bucket, is it... 50 million plus or 10 to 50?
Well, we're not providing specific information about the size of the deals. We are covered by a client confidentiality agreements. But what I can say is that they are material. And I think what I'm excited about as far as the two deals that I referenced in my opening comments. One, the cab design opportunity is a demonstration that our full vehicle credentials that we've established in passenger vehicles are applicable to the off-highway and the truck sectors. And I'm also very, very excited that that the commercial truck industry is really now starting to invest in software-defined vehicles in a way, again, that we've seen from the passenger vehicle sector, and our involvement at a middleware level, you know, is exciting because it really positions us centrally to help the customer that we're working with architect and deploy the platform from which connected services will be delivered to not just the product that we are working on, but to future products as well. And so we're expecting that relationship to extend beyond one program. So the sort of direction of our commercial truck business, the business that we refer to as industrial heavy machinery, is not only improving in terms of the quantum revenue that it represents, it's also improving strategically. And that gives us confidence, you know, not just for this fiscal year, but beyond.
Understood. And one bookkeeping question, is it possible for you to share how much was the education segment, sub-segment revenue in rupee terms?
Sorry, sir, we cannot hear you.
Yeah, one bookkeeping question. Is it possible for you to share how much was the education sub-segment revenue in rupee terms?
Yeah, maybe that is something that we can share with you to our IR team after the call. Is that okay?
Perfect. Thanks a lot. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star and one on your phone now. Next question is from the line of Ashish from JM Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So in one of your recent interactions, you did mention that FY25 momentum. So whatever you achieved in FY25, that momentum will continue in FY25. So given that in FY24, we did around 50% kind of a revenue growth, would it be fair to assume that you have a reasonable amount of confidence to achieve that similar revenue growth run rate even in FY25?
Again, we don't provide guidance, specific guidance. But what I can say is that you know, we will assert what I've said previously. We expect to grow from the first quarter. We expect a relatively strong year this year. The visibility that we've got across the sectors that we are operating in gives us confidence at this stage that momentum will continue beyond calendar year 2024 and into calendar year 2025. So right now we're not seeing any drop in the demand environment And so we'll continue to invest in order to be able to take full advantage of that.
Yeah, fair enough. So incrementally, anything on the semiconductor business you could share? So because Tata Electronics does is setting up a fab unit along with PSMC. Is there a certain role that we also have to play here? Is there an opportunity that you see?
Well, when we look at the semiconductor sector, there's two areas of interest for us in terms of value that we expect to deliver. You know, one is in smart manufacturing. You know, there is a significant opportunity here in India, not just with the group, but with the potential that is building in and around semiconductors. And we think that the skill sets that we've established in sectors like automotive are fungible to the semiconductor industry. We are also excited about the fact that as OEMs look to bring down their cost and control, the type of capability that will inform future products, they're looking to vertically integrate, you know, software and electronics, which includes silicon, and so, you know, we are in some fairly exciting discussions with some of our customers that will look to leverage the products from organizations like Tata Electronics in a package way in support of future product development.
Fair enough. So lastly, on Airbus, anything you would like to share in terms of timelines as to when we can see the commercial ramp-up benefiting us?
Well, we've seen at Airbus, we've seen growth in the first quarter from the second half of last fiscal year. We expect that to continue in Q2 and also in H2. And not only are we looking to discharge the current order book at Airbus, as you can imagine, we're also looking for additional opportunities. And we're in discussions with Airbus in different parts of the world about those opportunities. So we're excited about the Airbus relationship, but we're also excited about the aerospace sector. I referenced in my comments the deal that we've secured with an aircraft seat manufacturer, a business class and first class seating manufacturer, and that organization is looking to leverage our support to build an ODC here in India. And I think the opportunity that represents is not just an opportunity for us to increase our aerospace volumes. It represents obviously diversification from the relationship we've got with Airbus, and that's something that we expect to build upon.
So in all fairness, the Airbus deal can be as large as towards or VinFast was to us when it goes at peak, right? That's a fair assumption.
No, I certainly think that the potential with Airbus is there for us to grow significantly. But the one of the things that I would caution you on is that the aerospace industry is a highly regulated industry, and so one has to demonstrate process and capability compliance before one is entrusted to be able to take on different and bigger engagements. And so we're working very closely with Airbus to demonstrate what we are capable of. And as confidence builds, then obviously we will look to extend our current ambitions.
Thanks. So last question, if I may, is for Savita ma'am. I mean, say you said on margins, you would like to maintain margins for FY25. So are you benchmarking FY24 exit margins or first quarter FY25 margins?
Well, the margins between first quarter and the full year 24 are not too far apart. So obviously, let's take the higher one as a target for the year, and that's really what we want to try and aim towards. And as we see progress of business growth and pipelines during the year, we will see other opportunities that evolve as well before we move into fiscal 26.
This helps. Thanks, and all the best.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Chandramouli Muthiah from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, and thank you for taking my questions. My first question is just on the utilization rates. It's pretty healthy, 86.5%, and you mentioned that you're redeploying employees more efficiently in the firm. Just trying to understand how you're thinking about hiring outlook for FY25, and in the past few years, what has been sort of the maximum utilization rate that you've been able to achieve? So just trying to understand sort of the interplay between hiring and utilization in our sort of efficiency and margin journey going forward.
Just in terms of utilization, I'll make some comments, and then I'll invite Sukanya, our Chief Operating Officer, to come in and talk about the work that we're doing, not just in the area of utilization, but in also in other areas of operational efficiency. You know, I think the utilization rates that we achieved in Q1 are close to the optimum levels of utilization that we're going to look to drive inside of our business. When we look at utilization, we obviously look at it at an aggregate level, but we also look to analyze utilization both onshore and offshore. There's more work that I think that we can do onshore, in terms of improvements in utilization. But I think for the most part, we're close to an optimum level in our offshore centers.
Thank you, Warren. And I think I'd just like to add there that while we are focusing on utilization, I think the important part is also to look at how the whole demand is shaping up. And as the focus areas change, there is going to be capability building investments that we need to continuously do so that we can repurpose a lot of our workforce to the new areas. So there will be some more hiring that we will do, and also look at optimizing our pyramid. So it will be a combination of GETs that we will hire, as well as look at augmenting the capability by looking at recruiting for certain areas, and at the same time having a focus on the utilization.
Got it. That's helpful. My second question is just as you look at how you're building your business for the next few years, if you were to split your key areas of activity into aerospace, education, industrial, automotive, just trying to understand where you see the maximum opportunity and potential for the company to capitalize on growth, if you were to sort of divide the business into these four buckets, just trying to understand what your rank order of opportunity set would be amongst these key buckets.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think if we look at demand across the different sectors, I think if we look at percentage growth, aerospace is perhaps the sector that represents the larger opportunity because we're coming off such a small base. I also think that that the investments that we've made in aerospace in the last 2 to 3 years, we've really not yet fully harvested. And so I think if we look in a 12, 18 months, 2 years from now, I would certainly expect the aerospace business to make a bigger percentage contribution than it does today. But our core, the core of our business is automotive, and it will continue to be. And if you look at automotive, despite the volatility from a sales perspective, the R&D investment in the transformation that is going on in automotive continues to excite us, not just in the short term, but medium to long term. the industry is going through a once-in-a-generation transformation. And the investments that are being made in autonomous driving, in the move to alternative propulsion systems, and in the move to connected and software-defined vehicles, will drive a significant demand for engineers and for the services that organizations like ourselves provide. So we'll be focused on taking advantage of that, whilst at the same time, you know, looking to take advantage of our footprint in aerospace and the opportunity that that is there.
Got it. That's helpful. And my last question is just trying to understand sort of the VinFast bit a little bit. It looks like we are now coming towards the end of whatever the customer-specific changes are in their outlook. So just trying to understand, are we now at sort of close to zero-level contribution from VinFast? Is there a very minimal sort of maintenance revenue that will continue there? Just trying to understand how to sort of now piece that out and start analyzing the rest of the business.
Yeah, at VinFast, as I commented, we've completed the two vehicles that we were responsible for. We're very proud of those two vehicles. VinFast will launch the vehicles this year, and we think that that those vehicles will have a significant impact on the markets in which they are launched. The product development work is largely concluded. They are moving to a focus upon building the products that that we've engineered for them. We'll continue at a relatively modest level to support that. And as their fortunes are confirmed in and around the success of the products that that they are selling in different parts of the world, we expect them to at some point in the future, invest in extending their portfolio. At that point, we will have the opportunity, I think, to compete for similar types of projects that that we've delivered in the last couple of years. But as of right now, the only visibility that we've got is to maintain a relatively small footprint with VinFast, and we expect that to continue in the coming quarters.
Got it. That's helpful. Thank you very much and all the best.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Vijay Lohia for closing comments. Over to you.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us on the call today. We hope we've been able to answer most of your questions. If there are any further questions, please do get in touch with the Investor Relations team and we'll be happy to answer your questions. Goodbye from all of us here at the management team. Thank you.
Thank you, members of the management team.
Thank you.
On behalf of...